Welcome to Rainbow Wedding Network's podcast. RainbowWeddingNetwork.com was launched in September 2000 and has been a trusted LGBT wedding resource for 15 years. RWN has produced an ongoing national tour of LGBT wedding expos with over 150 events in 28 different states since 2003. We also offer an extensive online directory with screened gay-friendly wedding and home-related businesses, a free honeymoon registry, customized wedding web pages for couples, LGBT-specific ceremony planning tips, parenting resources, and more. Check us out online at RainbowWeddingNetwork.com and also at SameLoveSameRights.com for further information, links to social media, or to make a donation to help keeping this podcast going strong. Thank you. Welcome to our first podcast here with Rainbow Wedding Network. It's November 2015. We're so excited to finally put this together and come to you with all of our insights and ideas and thoughts regarding the wedding industry. Cindy's going to start us off this afternoon with a little background information about Rainbow Wedding Network.
Okay. Well, thank you. And, of course, it's very exciting to have our first podcast up here on Rainbow Wedding Network. But let's see, where to begin? Marion and I launched Rainbow Wedding Network in 2000 as the first LGBT wedding gift registry and online directory for LGBT-friendly wedding and travel professionals. And I always love to remind people that back in the day, back in 1999 and 2000, long time ago, 15, almost 16 years now ago, when you thought about registering for your weddings, right, if you were a couple, straight or gay, and you go to register for your weddings, you would have to go to a department store.
Yes.
Think about the days before the web.
This was the time before most business owners had an email address, ladies and gentlemen. I know a lot of you can't quite remember that far back, but it actually happened.
Exactly. Back in the day, if you wanted to register for your wedding, you'd have to walk into Macy's. I don't even know if Target was doing registries back then.
I don't think so either.
I think like Pier 1, Macy's, of course you could go to Bloomingdale's or whatever. That is where you had to go to register for your wedding. And back in those days, they had one spot for the bride to put her name and one spot for the groom to put his name. There was no partner, just number one, number two, nothing like that. It was bride and groom.
And you often had to meet face-to-face with the sales clerk to get that going. So it was pretty intimidating.
Yeah, there was no, like, walking up to a kiosk, grabbing the little beep-beep machine, walking around Target and beeping your favorite items, and it goes in and you can put the beep-beep machine back up, and life is good. No, you're right. You had to go to remember, like, the top floor where nobody went to shop in Macy's, and that's where, like, all the bridal, you know, the china, all that was located. And you're right. You'd have to see the rep, which is, you know, a little intimidating if you're an LGBT couple back in 1999.
Right.
So Marion and I thought, hey,
I think this was your brainchild, Cindy. Well, you actually came up with the idea one day. What if we had a registry that said partner and partner at the top? So it was gay-friendly, lesbian-friendly, trans-friendly. You know, it was even straight-friendly.
Right.
Exactly. And a lot of people in our circles thought, wow, that is a really good idea. And, of course, the internet was just taking off, so we were trying to figure out how to make that happen.
Exactly.
And that's how Rainbow Wedding Network was born. And the second part of the story was when you called me on the phone at work, all excited because you thought about the directory idea.
Yeah, exactly.
And, of course, we didn't have online directories back then, so it was kind of a nouveau idea. So well done.
So we decided, hey, why don't we put LGBT-friendly businesses on a directory where couples could go and just find those businesses without that crazy, oh my goodness, I must call around and hope and pray that I find the one who doesn't yell at me.
Right?
We're just going to make this list. So, and I also love to remind people that the dot-com crash was from 1999 to 2001. I joke that what a brilliant idea to start an LGBT wedding gift registry / directory in the middle of the .com crash.
We could do a whole podcast about that decision. We won't. But yes, it's an interesting part of history.
Interesting part of history. And we kept going. Thankfully, I don't think we watched the news much back then. So we didn't know that this big crash was happening and websites were, poof, going away overnight.
Well, we didn't manage to get any venture capital. So that saved us because we didn't have to pay back people, you know, millions of dollars.
That's correct.
It took us a while to get off the ground. Although, you also like to say,
within the first 6 months, we had over 1 million hits to our website.
So we were off to a great start. Yeah,
with no advertising. No advertising. Also, I love to bring up, which I don't bring up much, but just on a little fun part of this podcast, is the LGBT community. There was a lot of people in the LGBT community that did not like what we were doing.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yes. My goodness. When we went to Pride festivals, and, you know,
trying to advertise by word of mouth.
Yeah. We would buy the table at the Pride festival. We would have our little marketing. Remember those purple cards?
Oh, yeah.
The first purple
like
cards?
We bought like 10,000 in the first run.
Yes.
Yeah. Boxes and boxes.
Yeah. And we would hand them out to what we thought looked like couples coming by. You know, we weren't handing them out to just everybody. But we'd be like, hey, you know, we're just launching this rainbow. Remember how they would rip it up in our face and throw it on the ground and spit on it and stomp on it and just yell at us? How dare we start
trying to homogenize the gay community into the straight world. Yes.
You remember that well.
I do.
It was nightmares after nightmares. So it wasn't like, we had this one side of us, of our website, doing really, really well, very quickly. And then we had sometimes reality of meeting couples face to face, and they would yell at us horribly about how dare we launch this website.
But then we also had the other side, which was the vendors. We had a
lot
of gay-owned businesses, but also straight-owned business owners who came up to us very grateful for this opportunity to actually reach out to LGBT couples because they were wedding professionals and they didn't figure out, prior to this time, a realistic way to advertise to this particular niche. And they were our biggest advocates.
You are right.
Even bigger than the LGBT couples back then, which perhaps we shouldn't be saying, but it's the truth.
It's the truth.
You're going to find honesty here on our podcast.
That's right. And I think that is why you and I decided, you know what, I think we're on to something. Because we did have so much support from businesses out there who wanted to be on this list and who wanted to pay to be on the list.
And they weren't just looking for business. They sincerely wanted to be involved with us because they believed in equality.
Exactly.
Our rates back then were close to $400 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And people knew we didn't necessarily have a brand or a name for ourselves, and they were willing because we'd go face to face, business to business, and do, you know, sit down with people. They were willing to invest in us back then because they stood up and they stood behind equality. And that is very touching, and that's the heart of what we're founded on, which is good mojo, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. And, once again, we're in the middle of the dot-com crash, so these businesses could not trust that we would be around longer than a minute. But yet, you're right, they believed in the LGBT community and the rights for marriage equality way back then enough to say, I believe in this, and here's how I want to help. So I think that's what really kept us energized to continue on. And, of course, we did have those lots of couples out there who were using our resources. And, you know, we kept seeing those stats. We kept seeing that increase. And so we decided, okay, we're going to invest in this company a lot more. This was something we were doing on the side from our full-time jobs. And we decided, okay, we're going to do this. We sold our house in Atlanta, Georgia, and moved up here to the Western North Carolina, to the mountains. And that's where we sit now. And since then, that was 1993.
No.
I'm sorry. Not that long ago.
Feels like it.
1999. But now let's transition us to 2003. So in 2003, we came up with the other idea of there's lots of, you know, bridal fairs and wedding fairs where couples, mostly were straight bridal fairs, for the bride to come in and meet and greet businesses. So we said, well, there's not any for the LGBT community, so we need to start producing LGBT wedding expos where couples can walk in the door feeling confident and not having that awkwardness and be able to meet with businesses face to face. And so we decided, okay, we had a very enthusiastic person in Minneapolis, Minnesota, who said, I want it at this hotel. And so our very first show was in Minneapolis in 2003. And back in those days, we were just doing, what, a handful of shows a year.
One or two a year.
One, two, maybe three. I think we got up to like four shows in a year. That was really big, doing that amount. But we had some really historic events. I mean, we were in Massachusetts, in Boston, Cambridge there, 2 weeks before marriage licenses were legal.
In 2004.
Yeah, in 2004. And now, you know, returning this Sunday there. So, same place. And how exciting, you know, I feel like I'm going back to the birthplace of marriage equality, you know, and I think, wow, we were there 2 weeks before marriage licenses were legal, having an amazing show there. And I know Sunday will be just as amazing. And then we've been in, I'm trying to think of some of the other places where it was so historic. In California, we did this, you know, California bounced back and forth between marriage equality. Nope. Yes, no, yes, no. San Francisco, remember?
Yeah.
You know, the whole
Gavin
thing.
Newsom,
Gavin Newsom doing, you know.
Being up and down the, you know, through California in the van doing the back-to-back-to-back-to-back expos.
Yeah. Right. And so then in 2006, we began producing, because, you know, we're pioneers. We began producing the first printed LGBT wedding magazine.
Full color, beautiful, glossy.
You can talk more about that, because you and Ira, we also have Ira here today.
Which was part of our history. Yeah, he's our silent partner at the moment, but he came to us before 2003. What year did you start working?
Oh, no, it was 2004, actually. I put in my application in November, December of 2003. It was right around Christmas, but it wasn't until January of 2004, I think, I started after the holidays.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah, and you two are really the brainchild to the RWN magazine, the Rainbow Wedding Network printed magazine.
Which I'm very, this is Marianne again, I'm very proud of that publication, Ira, because it was so substantive, you know, we didn't plaster it with all advertisements. We had a nice amount of advertisements and a nice amount of content, and we stayed true to LGBT-targeted content, so every article was about gay and lesbian couples planning their weddings, and it was tips and ideas and real couple stories and insights, and all of that was specific to the LGBT market and audience. And I'm so proud of it. It was a beautiful publication. We ended up taking it out of print a few years later because couples continued to tell us they prefer their information digitally. So a lot of the content now appears online. It's not in a set magazine format anymore, but just appears article by article online, as many, many publications appear nowadays.
Exactly.
But it was a groundbreaking publication and just beautiful. And it was the first.
Yeah, I think it was a really important milestone because it was one of the first times couples could go and pick up a, you know, printed magazine that was a little more specific to them, read about other couples who were getting married, to feel like they're not in this journey alone, that there are other couples out there who are planning weddings. It's something they can do without being so fearful, and there are people who are going to be there and support them. Of course, we had done that in so many ways before, but I think the print magazine just helped to carry on that theme.
I think you're right, Ira, and it's good to mention this in the historical context, because these young folks that listen to a podcast now in 2015 may not remember. Back then in 2006, 2007, just to see a picture of a real gay couple that wasn't just a couple of models of straight people looking gay or dressed up to put their arms around each other like they're at a wedding. You know, these are real couples in real photos. Mm-hmm. And people in the community were so hungry for that because it was legitimizing and validating. And that's been a lot of the work that we've done here at Rainbow Wedding Network, is that side of validating people's experience. And so that's an important part of what we do too.
And I always love to give a shout out to the couples who were brave enough to put their faces on our cover of the magazine, or to be part of the stories about them. You know, they were putting that out there on a national publication back in that time too. So that's, you know.
Yeah, it does take courage to step up and not only share your story, but put your face out there so that others can see you and to really be a symbol of what marriage meant to the gay community.
Exactly. And couples love to pick up that magazine during the expos. I know every expo that I went to, they were so excited to pick it up and feel it and take it home.
Take it, how they hold it to their heart.
they would
keep hold of those for
a long time. Yeah. So that's kind of a quick history. And I don't know if I mentioned, but we are now over 150 LGBT wedding expos that we produce now, that we have produced now. Since 2003, and now we're trying to produce more like 25 to 30 shows a year, and so we've really ramped those up, and we're hoping here in 2016 to get closer to that 30 mark. So check us out online and make sure that you come and visit us at one of our expos.
We are going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk about some exciting engagement proposal ideas. Yeah. But I wanted to take a moment and give a shout out to our proud sponsor of today's podcast, being the Sheraton Commander Hotel, which we previously mentioned. They're in Cambridge, Massachusetts. This elegant yet trendy Harvard Square hotel is located where George Washington took command of the Continental Army. And the hotel embraces its past heritage with a remarkable Mount Vernon-inspired entrance. Guests can find plenty of things to do there in Harvard Square and throughout Cambridge, as well as easy access to downtown Boston. The Sheraton Commander has hosted 6 of Rainbow Wedding Network's Same Love, Same Rights LGBT Wedding Expos. That first one back in 2004 when marriage equality was first enacted in Massachusetts. Their enthused and capable staff will offer a warm welcome and help make your event with them memorable and fabulous, and your stay in their plush guest rooms comfortable and relaxing. The Sheraton Commander Hotel, Cambridge. All right, our next topic for today's podcast is exciting engagement proposal ideas.
Oh boy.
Yeah. I just wanted to start off by reminiscing real quickly. Cindy and I got engaged in a fun way, which was we had been dating for a year. So it was our year anniversary of our first date, and we had decided to have another date at a park that day. We lived in Decatur, Georgia, of course, as many lesbians did back in the day. And we decided to hang out at a park and have a picnic and bring some paints and set up easels, and we were doing some watercoloring, which we need to do again, sweetie. But we were doing that and having a lovely little day together with our dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And then, unbeknownst to each other, we actually proposed on that same day to each other. So what happened was we decided it was gift-giving time, and I said, oh, you go first, you know. And Cindy's like, no, you go first, sweetie. You go first. And I said, well, okay, because she can be very persuasive. And so I said, well, I want to give you your gift over here on this bridge. And the reason for that was we had shared our first kiss on a bridge. So bridges had become a little bit important for us. At this point, we had started chatting about Rainbow Wedding Network.
Right.
It was 1999.
Yeah.
And, it was 1999 because we started dating in 98. So we were just on the cusp of talking about Rainbow Wedding Network and the whole idea of bridges, like bridging couples with vendors. Yeah, the idea of bridges had become important to us.
Right.
So I had Cindy walk over to this bridge with me and took a moment, paused. There were people in the park and I was a little embarrassed, but I went for it and got down on my knee and took the ring out and asked her to marry me. And she was like, no. And she said, no, I mean, yes, but no.
Because I thought I had this great idea, which was to propose to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and Cindy, being a photographer, had made a homemade card, and it was a, you know, anniversary card, but she put it in the envelope, and she'd taken a photo of the engagement ring and put it on as the front photo on the card and wrote below it, will you marry me? And then she had the ring with her as well. So then I opened the card, and so we proposed to each other on the same day. So that was very auspicious.
Yep.
And a fun, thing. Of course, if any of you out there in podcast land can pull that off, unbeknownst to each other, certainly let us know.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know that that happens very often.
I know.
Yeah. But it's very exciting.
It was a fun day. Meant to be.
Yeah. But we still have the paintings. Cindy doesn't know where they are, but I have a special box of keepsakes. So, yes, we still have those things.
I married well.
But other proposal ideas, of course, they've continued to evolve over the years. There's some oldies but goodies I always like to remind couples about. You know, as holiday season approaches, I think in the straight world, holiday engagements are very hot, right?
Right.
But gay and lesbian couples get engaged a lot over the holidays as well. It's the time where we're all feeling close and cuddly and want to think about the future. So it's a good time to go ahead and pop the question. So I like to always mention, you know, those family gatherings can be such great heartfelt moments.
Right.
It's good if you get a family member or two or three or all of them involved.
Right.
Because sometimes one of them can take the video or they can do an extra little prep for you or, you know, other different ideas that you may have will come together better if you get some of the other family members involved. There's also the oldie but the goodie with wrapping that engagement ring, kind of like Cindy did in the card, but in a present.
And you like a whole bunch of presents? Where it goes from the big all the way down to the little?
That's right.
Yeah, where they get really frustrated midway through, like, what is going on? And then they finally get to the, that's always fun.
Or something like tying it to the menorah or tying it to the, what do you call that?
Mistletoe.
The mistletoe, making your partner kind of look for it, or hiding it in the gingerbread house, making a little treasure hunt. Sweetie, I think there's something there for you under the tree or in the gingerbread house, and they have to go hunt. So those are some oldies but goodies that are
about
fun to
on
remember.
The beach.
We're talking about holidays.
Oh, I'm sorry, holidays. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, if you're taking that ski getaway, of course, that's memorable. Yeah.
Another great way is Christmas carolers, having a little inopportune, you know, chance for the carolers to come up and step to the front door with a sweetie in the middle of all the holiday celebrations, and that little proposal's kind of snuck in an unexpected way there, too.
Wow, you know, we wrote an article a little while back about this, and one thing we mentioned in the article, Ira, was actually pre-planning it with carolers, where they sing traditional carols, and then at the end of their set, they sing something like, "Take me to the church on time," and that's when you get down on your knees. So that's like the pre-planning that's involved, and that just adds a little more flair and really sweeps your partner off their feet if they're one of those diehard romantics, and it's not that hard to pull that off. For a lot of people. So, you know, a lot of people know people who will carol or are involved
in the local
choir. It's
not like
putting
together the big flash mob.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't think is really in style anymore. I mean, I haven't found any flash mobs. Like 2013, 2014 was like the flash mob time frame. And now you don't see that. But, you know, this isn't as intense as the flash mob.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Yeah, no, it's, I think, a little easier to pull off. Either involving family in a gathering, or involving family as carolers, or involving friends as carolers. I think most of us can pull that off.
It's a little more intimate. It's easier to manage, I think.
What else you got, Ira? What other ideas?
Well, of course, movie proposals, because I'm a big movie buff. Any sort of romantic movie, if you're, you know, watching that favorite movie during the holidays, be it An Affair to Remember, or you can even take that into an action step and, you know, movies like Say Anything, where you have John Cusack holding the boombox, playing Peter Gabriel.
Which, of course, Peter Gabriel's standard. We had quotes from, you know, In Your Eyes at our wedding. Oh, yeah.
Anything you can do to pull that in. You could be in your Big Bird pajamas on the sofa, watching the movie, and then all of a sudden you're down on one knee. And even something that simple can be memorable, can be a very special moment. That you're going to cherish forever. And that movie is going to become an even bigger part of your lives, of your relationship, that little moment to remember every time that movie is popped on the TV.
Tears. Yeah, absolutely. For those who want to have a private engagement, that's a lot of fun. That's
absolutely
definitely a fun and memorable way. I have one that's a little more public again, which is like a shopping date surprise. It might involve a little more planning. If you can get your local jeweler involved or the jeweler that you plan to use for your engagement ring and you're, you know, browsing so your partner has an idea that a proposal is in the air. And that way they're not caught completely off guard and there's not that embarrassment factor. But, the folks at the jewelry store maybe call you over to the counter and say something like, you know, we just got this ring in and I think it would be something you'd want to look at, or, you know, or you tell them what you'd like them to say and then you say what you would like to say to pop the question. Or you can get even grander than that and have your name called over an intercom or something.
Oh my goodness.
You know.
That's risky, man.
Yeah,
just make sure your partner's going to be okay with the whole public announcement. But
yeah.
It could work. I think they'll forgive you.
That could be a little risky.
Well, you know.
That's great.
Marriage is about risk.
I'm thinking Jumbotron. You know, that's another risky thing.
Oh,
you mentioned being at, like, Fenway or the Yankee Stadium, and you ask your sweetie to marry you, and they're like, what? That's a little crazy.
Yeah, that is,
or the, you know, the airplane flying over the beach. You know, that's another one that's a little risky.
But, hey, for some couples, it works.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, when I was doing a little research about proposals, there were some ideas about going to your sweetie's workplace, and I thought, oh, risky.
Yeah.
You know,
some coworkers are like your friends, and they really want to get in on it with you, and with you being the proposer,
right,
and support the two of you when it happens in a way that's
But you'd have to set that up right.
You need to know it's an accepting workplace, first of all, absolutely.
Yeah, you need to set that up. Did you guys know that there is a National Proposal Day?
No.
There is, and it will be on Sunday, March 20th, 2016, which, by the way, happens to be our Chicago LGBT Wedding Expo.
We'll have to mention that.
Right. So, you know, I just wanted to make sure that if anybody out there would like to propose at our Chicago LGBT Wedding Expo, just let us know. Facebook us.
We have done that before.
We have done that before.
There's been a couple that come to mind. One, the couple definitely let us know in advance and wanted the DJ to play a certain song, and we staged that they had won a particular raffle, and they were going to come up and talk about themselves and their story a little bit, which happened. And
right.
And one of them got down on her knee, and there we go. Boom. So exciting.
Yep. I think that was in Baltimore a couple of years ago. And then we had one out in Washington State with me. Wasn't as planned.
It was more spontaneous.
Yeah, it was
which
very
was
spontaneous.
Also so touching.
I tell you, every vendor and couple in there, we all cried and hugged and did that Southern thing. So, I didn't know there was a National Proposal Day. So you can go to nationalproposalday.com and you can find out all about that. It's proposalday.com. And did you know they had a stat there, which I don't know, you know, where they get their information, but they say that there will be over 1 million marriage proposals made in America during 2016.
Wow.
That's a lot of marriage proposals. And they said more than 10 million proposals of marriage made worldwide.
Say that again.
They're saying that in America there'll be 1 million proposals.
In next year, okay.
Next year,
that
2016.
That I could digest. And the next number?
In 2016, there'll be over 10 million proposals worldwide.
I wonder if that number is kind of stagnant or if it's gone up or down.
Yeah.
You know, we've got the population booms. We've got people going ahead and remarrying, in older, you know, middle-aged, older folks going ahead and marrying
exactly.
After they may have been divorced. But, you know, there's lots of factors. Now, of course, we have LGBT couples in many different countries marrying. So I wonder if that number has seen an increase or
right.
If there's the factor of some, you know, some straight couples nowadays are thinking, well, maybe I won't get married. Maybe, you know. Marriage isn't really for me.
I think a lot of the younger generation, they're waiting.
Yeah.
You know, they're waiting longer.
I agree because we all think we're going to live longer.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Better make sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, I thought that was interesting. So the other fun things that I found too, and this could go well with just about any of those proposals that you talked about. If you don't have family or friends kind of in on it,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you don't have that, you know, photographer staged in the bushes or something,
right.
You know, which is a little frightening. I mean, I'll just say that, like a little crazy paparazzi there when you have somebody staged to take photos. But you can get a ring cam. No way. Yeah, seriously. There is this box that you can rent, and you can get it from ringcam.com, where it's a box. And you put your ring in it, and then it has, on the front of the box, it has like a high-def, wide-angle video camera, along with audio. So when you're on your knee, proposing to your sweetie, and you open the box, it's recording.
And you don't think that's creepy?
But you get every tear, every sniffle, every whimper in 1080p.
Wow.
You've got the full audio. You got it all
right there. And of course, they have different packages. I think that's like $99 to rent the Ring Cam. And
I just want to say, if you decide to go for that idea, try to find a friend where you can practice. Because I could just see you getting up the nose of your partner. You know, because if you're on your knee, I just mean practice.
Okay? It'll be a private video you'll save. It's a sweet idea.
You
want to
capture the moment, not the nose hairs or the kneecaps or whatever, you know. So just think about that.
Yeah, exactly.
But it sounds like a fun idea. And I think a lot of couples would really enjoy it, because then they could post that right to social media. I'm sure that's super easy to upload. And who knows? You might win money on, you know, some game show online.
We've gone from make sure you find a friend to you get nose hairs to where you're going to win prizes on the ring. So, yes, but I thought that was interesting. But, you know, I didn't think about it. Make sure you plan ahead and try it out with a friend.
Yeah.
But just let the friend know it's not for real.
Yeah.
Or that could be a really good one, is where you're thinking, the friend thinks they're just practicing. And there's the proposal.
Don't want to accidentally propose there.
Now we're getting really complicated.
Okay, and then there was another thing that I found.
All right,
one more,
then it's time to transition, because we're getting out of
there. There was a really fun thing, too, which I found on Pinterest, which was a love letter ring. So this is for the picky sweetie. You know, your fiancé might be a little picky and wants to pick out, you know, the type of diamond or the type of engagement ring that they are going to be wearing. Right?
Sure.
And have forever.
Yeah.
You get this ring that is, you know, has shaped like a ring, but where the diamond would be is a little slot that you slide a love letter in. So you propose with a love letter ring, and then your sweetie gets to go and help pick out the engagement ring. So there's for your picky.
That's nice. And it's a love letter as opposed to like a gift certificate.
Yeah, that is better.
Yeah, do not put a gift certificate, and don't use the webcam with that. Wear the ring cam with that.
That's a nice idea. I like that.
Yeah. So I say for the, you know, people out there listening to Facebook us on how they plan to propose.
Sure.
Or you know, or this would be fun. How can I say this? If you are hoping to be, you know, your sweetie
proposed to too.
Yeah. What would be your dream way of having that happen? Does it include, you know, Fenway Park or Ring Cam or Game Show Win? I don't know.
You can drop a few little hints there on Facebook to your sweetie. Just let them know.
Exactly.
And our Facebook identity is facebook.com/RWN or /same love, same rights.
Actually, it's facebook.com/RWNCOM. So RWN com.
Sorry. That's why Ira's the tech guru.
Exactly.
Once again, Ira, it's RWNCOM.
Yeah, RWNCOM, just a shortened version of our URL. So that's facebook.com/RWNCOM.
Yep, Facebook is there with how you would like to propose to your sweetie, or how you plan to propose, or what would be your favorite way that you got proposed to.
All right, I would love for us to move on and talk about one of our other topics today, which is wedding budgets.
Budgets.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Another
Lord,
big topic for
weddings.
Our first podcast today that people are pretty interested in thinking about, talking about. A lot of couples maybe don't fear the budget talk, but they maybe don't have that talk as often as they should. And
yeah.
It's helpful, you know, the finances, I guess they still say is the number one reason people get divorced. So why not,
right.
As you're planning your wedding, start off the habit of chatting about these things. And I think one reason couples don't like to talk about it is because it's kind of boring when you want to talk about, I want to talk about what kind of dress I'm wearing, or I just love the flowers or the cake. You know, me, I want to talk about cake, but,
yes, Marianne and cake,
but, you know, talking about that budget is actually a really important part of the planning process.
It should be the first thing you do.
Well, no.
after the ring
second
cam,
or third thing you do.
Fenway Park,
yeah,
stadium. But it should be, you know, it should be some of your first decisions.
Oh yeah,
should be setting that budget. What kind of budget will you have for your wedding?
And we see couples. We've seen tens of thousands of couples over the years.
Oh, tens and tens of thousands of couples.
And we have seen the spectrum from people spending, you know, $100 on a marriage license at the Justice of the Peace, and they're done. They go out to dinner, so maybe $200 total, to, you know, $150,000, $200,000 weddings.
Yep.
So we've seen it all, and there's no shame
right.
in having
right.
whatever budget is right for you. But talking about it, I think is key.
Well, you know, and I think also mentioning that real quickly is, you know, with the Supreme Court ruling, you know, in July, I think there was
late June, early,
yeah, that's right. I was, you know, on the beach. But
June 26th?
That's right.
You were not on the beach.
Not on the beach. But there was a lot of, like, pent-up demands, you know, where there was a lot of couples that have been together 5, 10, 15, 20 plus years. And when it became legal, they decided they would quickly go, you know, to a Justice of the Peace or to the courthouse, get married, boom, you're done, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, so there was a lot of that. There was a lot of couples that waited for that to happen, and knowing that they weren't going to spend a lot on their weddings. And now we're going to have, now that we're past that point, now we're going to have couples. And then, of course, there was a lot of couples that did that as well, that went to the courthouse or the Justice of the Peace, had a quick wedding, and then are now planning the
now
big
planning
wedding.
A big reception.
Right, the big reception, party. And now we're going to also see couples that are kind of in the evolution of their relationships who are going to get engaged, and they're going to take more time to plan, and they're going to set, maybe their budgets will be a little bit different because maybe they're not, it's not like it was pre-Supreme Court, where if a state legalized marriage equality, you weren't sure if it was going to go away in a few months or whatever, right? So
yeah,
now
you got
we
married,
know.
Like, you know, in California, people thought it would stick in 2008, and we had marriage equality that summer before Prop 8, and then it was taken away.
Then it was taken away, right.
So a lot of couples learned to go ahead and get married quickly, and then maybe have a party after, and sometimes the party happened and sometimes it didn't.
Right, exactly.
But LGBT couples sort of got gun-shy about planning 1 and 2 and 3 years out.
Exactly.
Which, as you're absolutely right, that's going to shift.
That's going to shift. And so now we're going to see couples where, now it's kind of like, you can get engaged, you can take your time, you can save up, you can set your budget, decide what that's going to be, save up for it, and plan further out. So that's kind of exciting, because the Williams Institute, which, by the way, is fabulous. If you're like a little, you
that's
know,
true.
Like me, like a little nerd who loves to go and read all of these reports and research, they're saying that LGBT weddings will bring in $2.5 billion annually to the U.S. economy. So that's impressive.
That's a lot of money.
It's
I mean,
a lot
you
of
know,
money.
If you really sit there and think about that number. And it's important for couples.
Right.
As we say at each of our expos, to think about how much power you have within that, whether your budget is $10 or $10 million, you have power with that money.
That's right.
So you want to invest in wedding professionals that support equality and do your homework with that. Because obviously, you know, the more we promote them and help them be successful, the more they continue to put it out there that they believe in equality and stand behind that, whether it continues to be marriage equality, family equality, adoption laws, LGBT youth, or, you know, equality for other minorities.
Mm-hmm.
So couples absolutely take
and
note.
We're finding a lot of businesses now that it is, you know, reality.
Nationally.
Yeah, now it's a reality. We are finding a lot of businesses who don't particularly still, you know, they still don't want to work with LGBT couples, but maybe they feel like they've got to because they don't want to get in trouble, they don't want to be on the news or on social media, that they're not catering, you know, the whole thing. We saw states like Indiana that was, you know, doing their fun stuff. So you have to be mindful if you're an LGBT couple and you're planning a wedding, I think, and make sure that you do find businesses that support us.
Yeah, it's important to remember acceptance isn't necessarily given, even though we have national marriage equality now, that we still have to find and support businesses who are going to support us, and it's going to result in a better experience overall. You're not dealing with someone who's uncomfortable with the situation. You're not uncomfortable with the situation, and you're supporting someone who actually welcomes you and supports you and is actually excited about your day. So that's really important too.
Yeah. And the all kinds of sources online, they're saying the average cost of weddings can range from $29,000 to $31,000. That's the average cost in the U.S. for weddings.
I think a lot of couples get surprised when they get down to the food part
of how
of planning their wedding. A lot of them get blindsided by that. I kind of hear at the expos, they sort of realize that reception venues
that's
have
your number
a price
one
tag.
Cost. Yes.
But then they don't often realize, you know, the catering portion does come into play. So those are things to do some homework on when you begin your budgeting, and be realistic about it, because if that means you need to take another year in your engagement process before you get married, you know, that's something to really consider so that you don't have to be surprised by it, or you don't have to overstretch your cash.
But the reception venue is the number one, you know, most expensive item to a wedding is the reception.
Sure.
Yep. Setting a budget too, I think, can help you determine what's important, what things you want most for your ceremony, be it the photography, or if you want a sit-down catered affair, or if you want the big banquet hall, or if you want to have a wedding in a national park, if you want to do something like that. So that can give you a good starting point to be able to determine what you want to include in your ceremony and your reception.
And I think, Ira, that does roll right into the ongoing conversation that you have with your partner about what is important to you.
Right.
And just like anything else, as you move forward in your marriage, those conversations are, again, key to helping each other understand what's important, what matters, what's the priority here. Because one of you may really, you know, the most important thing is just that family time at the wedding. And for the other one, it's that dream vision of the wedding they've had since they were 2 and a half. So, you know, I mean, you got to make that work together. And,
exactly.
And you need to go into it understanding your partner's ideas might be different. And so having those conversations keep sort of carving away down to what will actually be your wedding. I think that's, you know, that's great insight to know that those budget decisions do help you whittle away at what's really a priority.
Right. And it's $31,000, you know, spending that much on a wedding. Is that a priority? Or is it, do we go with, you know, with a reception place that's, you know, that's less expensive, or where we have our ceremony site, you know, we can go traditional like a church. Maybe you belong to a place of worship, and so therefore that's, you know, a lot less expensive. Or you go non-traditional and, you know, you go to the beach or to the mountains, or, you know, that can be a big budget saver as well. So
some other budget savers are, you know, Ira mentioned park space.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of, you know, not necessarily national parks, but state parks that have very low budget rental fees.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us don't think about that. And, of course, a lot of those state parks are really beautiful. So something to look into. Another one is, you know, when my sister and her partner had their anniversary party, I think it was their 25th anniversary, not of their marriage, but just of being together, several years ago, they asked a friend who had a really big historic house in the area with a nice yard if they might use their home for their party. And I don't know if money was exchanged hands or there was bartering, you know, that exchanged, but their friends were certainly agreeable to that because they all kind of had the same friends. So it sort of was just a big happy party. So that's something to consider too.
Yeah.
And when you book vendors, if you really are interested in a non-traditional venue, sometimes asking those vendors will lead to options.
Right.
A lot of times officiants, photographers know because they photographed in a variety of settings, not just weddings, but sometimes corporate events or family portraits. They're like, wait a minute, I know this place that has the waterfall and, or, you know, so don't be shy to ask those vendors you really connect with. They can be some gatekeepers for you.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. And they know the people to talk to, you know. I found a budget saver was electronic save the dates or invitations. And I was a little on the fence with that. Yeah. Like, I'm a little on the fence about that.
That's
like,
because you're pushing 50 and you're like, wait a minute, I gotta hold on to this thing from the past.
I'm pushing 50 and I'm thinking, like, how would I feel about getting an electronic invitation? Right. You know, does that, I don't know. I mean, I know that there's plenty of, like, print your own, DIY.
DIY.
Yeah, that one. DIY. But how do you feel about electronic? You're not getting anything in the mail. You're not getting any kind of paper to hold on to.
Or it's Facebook.
I have gotten
Facebook wedding invitations. Well, it's kind of like the event invite on Facebook. I think there's a certain degree of, I don't know, there's something nice about, maybe I romanticize it a bit, but about receiving the paper invitation in the mail and having the calligrapher, you know, do all your invitations, address all your invitations. I don't know. There's something that's still nice about that, even though there are some very nice Evite services out there that you can use to kind of get the same appearance, but you still don't have that tangible item to hold on to.
Yeah, I was a little on the fence about that. I wasn't quite sure.
I think, my opinion is, save the dates electronically.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Are awesome.
Yeah,
because
that totally makes sense.
Not only can you put the save the date out there, but you can then remind people of it,
right?
Make sure they got it.
That's right.
And social media or texting with save the dates is super convenient and helps you get to
that entire
group all at once,
right?
And if they've got that contact info for you or for your wedding coordinator right there, they can then contact you, say the day of the event, if something happened and they're not able to make it, or you know, it's an easy way for communication to happen. But right. I'm with you two that holding that invitation in your hand and then having it as a keepsake,
right,
to me is still important. Some people, I think, though, say your invitation sets the tone for your wedding. So if you're having a formal affair, a printed invitation with the raised lettering is expected. If your wedding is going to be more casual or, you know, more technology-oriented because you're just hip and trendy that way, then obviously digital invites would work. They would really help set the tone for that.
That's true. That is true. I found another thing that I was really on the fence about too. Now I should make this point that I did not wear a wedding dress.
No, of course not.
Of course not.
We all would have laughed.
Yeah, that would have been comical.
Cindy would have looked lovely, I think, in a dress.
That would have been a comical part of our wedding. But did you know that you can rent wedding dresses or you can purchase pre-owned?
Well, recycled apparel for the wedding is becoming more and more popular, and I think it's great because so many people just wear whether it's a tux or a gown or just a pantsuit of some kind, they wear those things once and then don't know what to do with them, and they feel bad about giving it to the thrift store, and they feel bad about it hanging in the closet. And so,
and you know what's funny is you made this observation, which is for tuxes, men and women go and rent the tuxes, right?
Yeah.
We rent the tuxes, we turn it in after the wedding, we're done, bada boom, bada bing, right? They're over with. But why is it with a wedding gown? I was like, ooh, would you do that? I mean, would you rent a wedding gown or would you buy a pre-owned wedding gown?
I think it's becoming more of a trend as people, you know, start to think a little more budget conscious on investing in the gown as opposed to putting that money toward other aspects of the ceremony. But there are some people who still want the brand new gown. They want to keep that, have that
right,
to be something that they pass down.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. It's like, you know.
So that tradition.
My mother
still
had a dream. There was a dream hanging in her closet, which didn't happen.
Aww.
But
that's true. But you know, a lot of couples or a lot of people more and more are getting into, you know, you hear about tiny living, you hear about people wanting
right,
to get away from holding on to stuff. And even though this would be extremely sentimental to have your gown or your tux for the rest of your life or to pass on, sometimes people don't want that psychological baggage in the back of their mind.
Right.
And they're finding peace in using it, loving it, feeling beautiful in it, and then letting it go. And, you know, that's an important part of life too. So there's pros and cons in both, and I think it can be a very big budget saver. You can get some
yes,
beautiful apparel. That is, you know, not what they call used, but recycled.
Well, you know, and if you wanted to, if you're that type of person where you wanted to hang on to it, buying the used gown versus the renting evidently is a much better option. So, you know, if you are that type of person who wants to hang it in the closet with a dream of your daughter or your granddaughter.
Or your son.
Or your son.
Yeah.
Wearing
apparel
that.
Apparel for the male bride.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then, you know, buying pre-owned is a great option.
You know, this sounds like a great time for a shameless plug. Because we do have a great assortment of vendors on Rainbow Wedding Network, and I have noticed a lot more consignment shops on our vendor list. Now, you can go over to rainbowweddingnetwork.com, click on local vendors, select your location, and find different apparel vendors there. Some vendors who cater a little bit more specifically to gay and lesbian couples and their unique tastes. So, I'm done with my shameless plug.
That's awesome. But we've had many vendors.
Vintage
is a plug. We've had many vendors, too, in our vendor list online who customize apparel.
Right.
For gay and lesbian couples, also for trans brides and grooms, or even for people who just need business apparel and can't find something that appeals to them. So, definitely check out that directory. Good idea, Ira.
Very good.
Also, you know, thinking of recycled things, more and more you can find recycled decor online that somebody used for their wedding or party. And, you know, you don't want to stuff all that in the closet.
Linens. I mean, you know, just simple things like linens. If you,
you don't necessarily have to go buy them. You can buy pre-owned, pre-used. May sound strange, but, you know, some of the centerpiece ideas, like the little, just the little extra finishing touches that you don't need to hold on to forever.
Right.
You can let somebody else use them.
Yep.
And so it's a great idea. It's a great
budget saver.
Yeah, great budget saver.
So I wanted to know on Facebook, another question is, would you buy the pre-owned or rent the wedding gown? Because I don't know, I had a thing with that. I'm not sure why I had a thing with that, but I did.
I would do it. I would definitely do it.
That's why I married you, sweetie.
But, you know, I think for some people, the gown holds that sentimentalism.
Right.
For me, it's a little bit of something else. So, you know. How many people nowadays, here's an interesting question too. How many people nowadays keep that top tier of the cake in the freezer for the year?
Yeah, yeah.
That used to be all the rage. How many actually do it now? You know, that's interesting to think about. Things are changing, and things are staying the same.
Exactly.
Another note, speaking of shameless plugs, we do have a second sponsor for today's podcast, and that is Susan Hart Hellman. She's a California-based freelance magazine writer and author of the first in her series of psychological murder mysteries, Catch and Release the Game. Catch and Release introduces us to Dr. Savannah Jameson, who is a behavioral neuropsychologist. She becomes an unintentional sleuth and defense witness in a gritty murder trial. Along the way, Savannah finds the woman of her dreams, and this exciting new mystery series also follows the unfolding history of same-sex marriage legislation in America. For more intriguing details, visit the author's website at SusanHartHellman.com. And now to round off today's podcast, we're going to talk about a current event.
Woohoo!
Yeah, because, you know, we're political people.
We try to be, right?
No, well, I mean, the truth is, we have been RainbowWeddingNetwork.com for 15 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have definitely not had a lot of days in the spotlight. But we have taken part in this history as it's unfolded, and I think we've taken an active part in making that history by supporting couples with their visions of having a wedding, by supporting wedding vendors and their visions of reaching out to the LGBT community, by legitimizing the issues of equality for the LGBT minority in America. We've had a place in that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's good for us to be, I think, conscious of what's going on politically, what those current events are, because we are involved whether we want to be or not.
Right.
And that's the case for everybody in the world. You know, you can bury your head in the sand, or you can take notice, and then you get to make another choice. Am I going to take action, or am I just going to talk about it?
Right.
Or am I going to... You know, you have those choices available to you at any given moment. So, Ira, what do you got today?
Yeah, we've talked today a bit about, you know, supporting vendors who support equality. And it's important to remember that there are people who still, regardless of the Supreme Court decision, don't agree with gay marriage.
And no.
What better way to talk about that subject than our favorite religious martyr, Kim Davis, who apparently this time is back at the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals trying to basically say Judge David Bunning denied her due process in his original ruling and made her a prisoner of conscience by imprisoning her for not actually carrying out the court's ruling to issue marriage license to same-sex couples. So she's not going to give up on this. She's going to keep coming back, it looks like. And I think it's important for us to think about how this is probably going to be our next part of marriage equality in this country, is dealing with religious freedom, dealing with people who are going to continue to pop up like this, and why it's not okay, especially when you're an elected official, when you're a public official with duties to carry out that specifically relate to marriage, how you don't just get to deny those by saying it's a religious issue for you. If you're a business owner, that's still a big issue. If you're a business owner denying the cake, or if you're, you know, a pizza shop denying the pizza to the gay couple. But when you're someone whose specific duty is you're an elected official by, you know, members of this country, citizens of this country, why you can't just shirk that duty and why you have to be held accountable. But apparently Kim Davis is gonna try to shirk that responsibility. So
just a little background, Ira, again, where is Kim Davis from? Just in case some of our listeners haven't kept up with
the
story.
That is in Roanoke County, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So she is in the middle of Kentucky, down here in the South in the Bible Belt. So that's probably one of the things that kind of feeds into that is that religious history of this area. But I think it's an issue that people across the country have to deal with. So.
I agree. I totally agree. And I think separation of church and state was a darn good idea. And I think we need to find our way back to it. And keep it black and white, but it's never that easy when you're talking about the human experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I find interesting is, if you think about what her job is not to endorse same-sex marriage, it's not to condone same-sex marriage. Her job, being, you know, the county clerk, is to issue marriage licenses. And that, all that means is, as a couple in Kentucky, straight, gay, you walk into your county clerk's office. Both of you have to go to get the marriage license. You have to present a form of ID, like a driver's license, passport. You have to be over 18. You can't be first cousins. You have, you know, there's these little requirements that to get a marriage license, you have to, you know, meet these requirements. It's the job of Kim Davis to look at these requirements, to look at these two people and say, yes, you've met the requirements, and here's your marriage license, and it's valid for 30 days.
Exactly.
She does not perform the marriage.
It's
she
not
has
her job
nothing to do with it.
You know, there's also that separation of powers in the way our government is laid out. The executive, the judicial, the legislative. Her job is not to be the judicial person.
Right.
And judge whether or not you fit her criteria.
Exactly.
And I mean, you could expand that and say, what about a police officer? I mean, when they are doing their job, they're upholding the law as it's been written or decided. They don't get to interpret the law
right. When
they carry out their duties.
That's right.
Whether they have a personal opinion against that law or different from that law, or whether they have a religious opinion different, they're supposed to carry out and uphold the law. And it's the same thing with Kim Davis. She doesn't get an excuse just because she has a different religious belief than the than the law that was agreed upon by our Supreme Court.
Exactly.
One thing that's interesting is she's tried to bridge the gap between separation of church and state by saying, every time I'm sworn in with an oath of office, I'm putting my hand on the Bible to swear. And that's a tradition saying that this religious law is superior to any law that the U.S. Supreme Court rules on, any law that the state of Kentucky issues. So she's been grasping at straws trying to, you know, overcome the separation of church and state. And it will probably be a battle that will go on for a while. We're going to see keep seeing her popping up until that appeal process is over. But it is a good reason for us to remember that there are still people out there who are not going to support our community, who are going to continue the fight. But the biggest part of the battle has been won, so that's a very good thing.
Right, exactly. I just think it's interesting that, you know, like I said, her job is not to endorse marriage equality. It's her job.
Her job isn't to interpret the law. Either.
Exactly. Her job is just to make sure that these two people standing before them fit the criteria to receive a marriage license and for her to issue that marriage license. And if she can't do that,
why does she still have her job?
Why does she still have her job?
And how much does she get paid a year?
A lot of money.
There's been no concise figure. There have been a few rumors circulating. One was that she'd been married, I believe, like four times. I don't know if anybody's actually substantiated it, but it's not really relevant how many marriages she's had or, you know, her history there. But she doesn't apparently makes, I think it's like $83,000 a year,
wow,
or something, or some of the estimates.
Again,
these are just kind of estimates floating out there.
Yeah.
So we as a community, as a, you know, she holds a public office.
Right.
So we pay her all of this money, which
is a lot of money.
And she's decided she doesn't have to do this part of her job.
And she has consistently lost, you know, efforts in the U.S. courts, right? I mean,
she consistently loses, and she's still wasting taxpayer dollars in addition to that salary.
That like, how much are we spending for her to take this?
That'd be an interesting figure to
court time and time again, because doing her job of just looking at these two people's requirements and making sure that they fit the requirements to receive a marriage license—that's all she does.
And instead of saying, you know what, I can't do this part of my job, I guess I need to resign.
Right.
So I can't carry out the duties for which I was elected.
Which any other normal person.
She's not willing to do that.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Yeah,
it is really frustrating. And she has lost consistently, as you were saying, Cindy, she's lost consistently at the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. So I don't see the ruling coming out
any different
this time.
Right, it's going to be any different.
But she's going to keep popping up. She wants to play the martyr. She wants to, I don't know if she, it would be interesting to get inside and see what the underlying motivation is, if this is really just liking in the limelight, or if it really is a deep religious, you know, religious cause inside. But again, you can always step aside.
Yeah,
but the thing that's important to remember with the religious argument is that a church can have its choice.
Mm-hmm.
It does not
have to marry particular
couples that
that's
it
correct.
Disagrees with.
That's right.
That's perfectly fine. The Supreme
Absolutely.
Court ruling does not infringe on that right.
And
that's
we should
right.
protect
those. But when you're
those
talking
those.
About, yeah, we should protect those, because that division of church and state is very important.
Exactly.
As we saw when this country was formed, there were reasons why that was so vital to our founding fathers and mothers. But, you know, when you take it out of the private arena of that particular church or mosque or temple, and you bring it into, this is a publicly elected official and her carrying out her duties, I think it's pretty black and white.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
She's not marrying people.
I know.
All she's doing is making sure they fit the requirements to receive a marriage license. It's not rocket science that if you can't do that part of your job,
get on out of there.
It'll be interesting when her...
We don't need to keep
Let's see,
job.
If she just circulated her resume, who would actually hire her? It would kind of be interesting follow-up.
Right.
I'm sorry. It'll be interesting, too, I think, when her time comes, you know, as I understand, she's an elected official. When her time comes again, how many of her constituents are going to actually stand by her or actually see it for what it is? How many of their tax dollars she's been wasting while not performing her duties. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
We definitely need to watch that.
Exactly.
I do understand, I don't want to go into it now, but I understand when the the law was passed to allow biracial marriages in mm-hmm. our country many years ago, that there was considerable fallout there. You know, it took time
right.
for the dust to settle.
Sure.
So these things, even though it's a Supreme Court ruling, big right. deal, you know, law of the land kind of stuff, it takes a little time for all of that to sort of work itself out. I think that's just a natural part of the process.
Right. And the world hasn't stopped revolving because LGBT couples can get married.
True.
You know, really, I mean, think about it. It has not
rained down locusts yeah. and...
Exactly.
Well, it's interesting how this became the cause. It wasn't
right.
eating pork. You know, you hear this all the time. It wasn't eating pork. It wasn't, you know, all the straight couples getting divorced a million times over
right.
remarrying. It wasn't any of those sins, those abominations. It was suddenly gay marriage.
Right.
It's interesting how that got made the banner for the religious cause.
Yes,
that is true.
That is
a good talk for another podcast. There's
exactly.
a lot to go into there.
Yeah, they can go into fear and all that stuff. But it hasn't happened. I mean, we have had businesses that they're right in the beginning where business owners were saying, I'm not going to, you know, do this and that. And states like Indiana trying to pop up with their, you know, and I'm sure that's still going on. Maybe we just don't hear as much about it. It's not making the news. I'm sure there's a lot going on that's just not front and center. But good old Kim Davis, she just, you know.
She's like a whack-a-mole.
She does keep coming up, doesn't she?
Keeps coming back.
Excellent. Well, I think this has been a wonderful first podcast. Thanks to Cindy and Woo-hoo. Ira and myself, Mary Ann, here with RainbowWeddingNetwork.com. Listen in for the next podcast, which will be created next week.
Yep.
And we look forward to recording these on a weekly basis from here forward and talking about the... ideas we have about wedding planning ideas, trends, other topics pertinent to LGBT couples and also wedding professionals. We do have a Rainbow Wedding Network Expo schedule available on our website. Again, it's rainbowweddingnetwork.com. You can also visit the site, visit the podcast page to make a donation to keep the podcast going. And we thank you for listening in.
And that podcast URL is rainbowweddingnetwork.com/podcast. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/rwn.com. rwn.com. Or you can also follow us on Twitter with keyword gay weddings.
That's right. Excellent. Well, we look forward to seeing you online and talking with you again next week.